It's that time of year again, cool, crisp weather and the start of college football season.
It's an honor and a privilege to get a chance to be the head football coach for the University of Illinois. From my time up north, I had an opportunity to look at our university from afar and just really kind of believe in what it stood for, a great academics and a lot of potential with our football team.
That's former NFL coach Levy Smith. We'll see if he can turn things around at Illinois, and we'll discuss the pressure surrounding Northwestern to have another great year in our Big Ten college football preview. Later, we'd like to get you ready for the weekend with some music on Fridays.
I'm a raise hand until I reach heaven's door. You're gonna have to forgive me, yeah.
We hear from Chicago artist Sir the Baptist, one of the many acts at Lollapalooza this summer. We talked to the preacher's son about how much his childhood and his dad are infused into his music. Stay tuned, that's all coming up this hour on the 21st.
I remember times that in New Water.
Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. It's finally fall as of yesterday anyway, and that means college football season is in full swing this weekend. And for the first time in years, there's a lot of excitement building around teams from Illinois. Northwestern is coming off a 10-win season and a trip to the Outback Bowl, while Illinois is looking to rebrand itself as a believable contender with the hiring of former Chicago Bears coach Levy Smith. Are you excited for this Big Ten football season? You can weigh in with your questions or comments. Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. It's our Big Ten College football preview. Later, we're going to be speaking with Zach Peerless. He's the editor-in-chief of SB Nation's Northwestern site, Inside NU. But first now, we're joined by Jeremy Werner, who's been covering Illinois athletics since 2007. He's the host of ESPN's The Tay and Jay Show here in Champaign. Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Jeremy, is there a time when you've seen this level of excitement surrounding Illinois football? I feel like we can't say when's the last time, because we're probably at unprecedented levels here, right?
Probably entering the 2008 season after that Rose Bowl year. I was a junior in college that Rose Bowl year, and that was so unexpected. And you thought, hey, now Illinois is a legit contender under Ron Zook. Oh, wait a minute. He went 8-16 the following couple seasons. And I just wrote about that today on scout.com. It was, you know, since 2009, Illinois has had one season where its coach didn't enter the year on the hot seat, right? I mean, he had 1 year of Tim Beckman, and then he was on the hot seat after a 2-10 start. So every year it's been about how can the coach survive, or it's not been about how can this program thrive. It's like, oh, how does this guy get to another year? Instead, now it's more about the long term. You got Lovey Smith, who brings credibility and stability to the program. Josh Whitman, the AD, made the bold move, and you feel like there's an actual future here. It might take a while to get to see that, but at least now Illinois fans have excitement that they feel like they have a guy that other schools would want as their head coach. They have a guy that could possibly, you know, in 5, 6, 7 years, lead them to the success we see at Wisconsin.
Wait, hold
Iowa,
on. 5 or 6, 7 years. Do you think that Illini fans are going to be that patient? Do you think that the fact that it's Levy Smith? Let's just talk. I wonder if we could talk about expectations for this year before the. I mean, do you even feel like there is any possible way that expectations can be met this year, given all of the hype that we've seen in the past couple of months?
I've tried to reel it in, and I kind of didn't.
Okay, reel it in now. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when you look at what Michigan State has done or Iowa has done or Wisconsin has done, just go back and look how long it took those coaches to get it there. They don't turn it around overnight. They don't do it with a flawed roster that they inherited. And that's what Lovey Smith's taking over. This is a very talented senior class. DeJuan Smoot could be a top 20 draft pick. Wes Lunt could play in the NFL. You know, there's some good players, especially on the defensive side of the football, but there's also a lot of depth concerns. This team has a lot of players that, you know, in the second group just shouldn't be playing in the Big Ten. The sophomore and junior classes are really, really weak. So do they have the depth to make it through a game against North Carolina, a game against a good Western Michigan team, and 9 Big Ten games this year? That schedule is really difficult. They can't handle any injuries. But there is a chance that this team has enough to make a bowl game. It has enough to maybe be a surprise team in the Big Ten West, because even if the West has some teams that are better than Illinois on the depth chart, they're flawed. Wisconsin isn't as good as they've been in past years. Nebraska coming off a bad season. Iowa's still really good, but are they Michigan or Ohio State? Probably not. So I think a bowl is an attainable goal.
But
if you talk to most people who know the Big Ten, a lot of them think Illinois is a 4-5 win team. I think it's a 5-win team because I think they're going to have injuries, but I still think, you know, they win some of these toss-up games. If they win in North Carolina, this team could definitely make a bowl game. But I'd, you know, the Illini fans, I think Lovie Smith's going to come in here and wave a magic wand. I don't see that happening. You still need talent to do it, and I just don't think Illinois has enough depth to do it.
Before we get into the specifics of the team and a little bit more on the depth, I want to ask you just again about expectations and even how that's sort of translated into ticket sales. The Daily Illini yesterday reporting 30,000 season tickets have been purchased. Only 2,000 of those were buyers from last season. So that kind of gets to the expectations we're talking about. I just had a practical question for you about how much you think that financial boost helps the program.
Well, Josh Whitman made a commitment that no athletic director has before, and a lot of Illini fans have been pushing for. Lovie Smith got a $21 million contract over 6 years. That could pay him up to $29 million. His staff has a salary pool of about $4 million. That's up there with Michigan and Ohio State. So Illinois is making the financial investment. Now they need fans to buy into that as well. And you have seen a big boost. Last year at the opener, they sold about 37,000 tickets. Saturday's game expected to be about 45,000. Last year they only had one game above 50,000. And that was the Ohio State game, and a lot of Ohio State fans showed up for that one. The North Carolina game is already pushing 50,000. So there's been a boost. It's going to take more winning for this to be sellouts consistently, for it to get back to what it was around that Rose Bowl game. You got to have some proof in the pudding. So, yeah, I think Illini fans are definitely excited. They should be excited about the future. They should be excited about a prospect of a team that can make a bowl game. I think expectations are, well, let's see. I think we're going to have a better looking team. But everything's got to kind of go the right way for this team to be uber successful right away. 2016 could be a good year. 2017's not going to be a good year based on the depth chart. So I think a lot of fans should have a little bit of patience. But I think they're buying in to an athletic department, a university that's finally prioritizing its football program, which, as much as this is a basketball school, if your football program isn't doing very well, that's the money program that makes all the money.
Jeremy, let's talk on the field now then, right? Because if we're on third head coach for some of the players, how much of an adjustment is that just for the players? Do you think that having someone like Lovie Smith coming in, they have sort of, look, this is NFL level expectations. Does that make the adjustment easier, or does it make a difference?
I think when you have somebody, this staff has more NFL experience than any staff in college football. I think that helps, but there is always a learning curve when you take on a new staff. And just to give you an idea, Joe Spencer, if you include his recruiting coach, has had 6 offensive line coaches at Illinois.
Wes
Lunt has had, I think, 3 or 4 offensive coordinators at Illinois, and he's only been here 3 or 4 years. So that just tells you how much turmoil these guys are going through. But I do think this is by far the best staff. I was talking with Jay Lehman the other day, former Illini All-American linebacker, and he said, I think Illinois probably the 13th best assistant coaches last year. He said, I think they're about third now, behind only Ohio State and Michigan. So I think that tells you how much better the coaching staff is going to be. The defense actually does a lot of similar things to what they were going to do under Bill Cubitt, because Mike Fair, a defensive line coach who's going to be the defensive coordinator, he came from the Lovie Smith coaching tree. He coached under Lovie Smith at Chicago, so they were going to do that stuff anyway. Offensively, there's a big difference. Bill Cubitt liked to air it out a lot. Garrick McGee loves to run the football, and I think that's a good thing for Illinois fans. They want to see more commitment to the run. Do they have the personnel to do that? That's going to be the really interesting
thing. Well, and that's the question, just right, for personnel. Let's start with offense, right? And let's just talk about Wes Lunt for a minute, quarterback. There's always been there have been health questions. You mentioned injuries before. What are we thinking about with his health and about the rest of the team in terms of injuries?
Well, the one thing they wanted out of Westmont was to stay healthy for all 12 games last year, and he did. He stayed healthy through all 12 games. They basically told him, if you get touched, fall down. We'd rather have you fall down, take a sack, than do you get hurt. Get rid of the ball as quickly as possible. It'll be interesting to see if Garrett McGee lets him take a couple hits, if he lets him actually run a little bit. But Westmont is one of the more talented pocket passers in college football. He can't run all that much, and I know that frustrated fans last year because they needed a quarterback who could run. But there are a few quarterbacks in college football who can make the throws he does as accurately as he does. He had a great year last year, in my opinion, but his receivers had about 60 drops. So if you take that away, he would have had over 3,000 yards, 20 touchdowns, 62% completion percentage. That's an NFL prospect. You know, you look at the NFL quarterbacks, some of the starters and backups, Wes Lunt is going to be on the minds of a lot of NFL teams. So I think quarterback is their strength. But can they run the football to help open up down the field passing? Because last year, teams would just sit back on them knowing that they couldn't run the football. So they just sit eight back in coverage or seven back in coverage and just drape the wide receiver. So you got to be able to run the football. You got to be able to protect him.
We're talking a Big Ten college preview with Jeremy Werner from ESPN. He's the host of the Tay and Jay Show. He also runs a website, Illini Inquirer for Scout. If you've got questions or comments, you can join us on Twitter, 24Show, if you want to tweet to us there. And who else are you watching? Jeremy, let's just stay on the offense for a second. Who else are you kind of keeping an eye out for? Who should we be watching for as maybe standouts that we've maybe missed or we should be keeping an eye on this season?
Yeah, obviously last year he split time with Josh Ferguson, who's with the Colts right now. But Keyshawn Vaughn, the sophomore running back, I think he's one of the better backs in the Big Ten. Just a tough cut, one-cut runner, good downhill runner that kind of fits what Garrett McGee wants to do. I expect him to have a big year. Illinois hasn't had a 1,000-yard rusher since Mikel Ashour back during that special season in 2010. I think Keyshawn Vaughn will be the first guy to top 1,000 yards since him. Malik Turner, a wide receiver out of Springfield, Sacred Heart Griffin, really physical target, really developed late last year. You know, Geronimo Allison was struggling towards the end of the year, and Malik Turner kind of picked it up. He's a really good athlete. He can leap up over people. And without Mikey Dudek, I think it's important to have a number one target. So he's the big thing. Justin Hardy returns from injury, and he's been really inconsistent in his career. Sat out last year with a foot injury, but he's got elite speed. And Westmont was talking about that the other day. Just to have somebody who can take the top off a defense, stretch the field, I think that's important. So if he can be a big play threat, that'd be big. You know, Dez Kane and Zach Rann are two guys who are in the slot receivers. And I would be shocked if Mikey Dudek doesn't return to play at some point this year. But my key will be that offensive line. And, I mean, the receivers got to hold on to the football like last year, but the offensive line has to get a push up front. They've been good in pass protection the last couple years, but in the Big Ten, you got to be strong, you got to be physical, and you got to simply beat your man one-on-one. They haven't done that the last couple years, so can that offensive line with a couple seniors, three returning starters, but two young guys, and Nick Allegretti and Gabe Megginson, can those guys give them a big boost in the strength department?
So, Jeremy, Bears fans know Lovie Smith making when he was his thing is defense. The Bears were a defensive, you know, that's what was their strength when he was coaching. We've been talking about the offense. Is there enough even there to be building a really great defense for the Illini?
There is this year. I don't know about next year, but this year the defensive line is good, like really good. DeJuan Smoot, the senior defensive end, had a big year last year, led the team in tackles for loss and sacks. He's likely going to be a first-round draft pick, and that'd be big for Illinois. He's one of the best pass rushers in the Big Ten. Strong, he's fast, he's just got the full package. But then opposite to him, Carroll Phillips, another senior, really speedy off the edge. He's good. Chunky Clements in the middle has a chance. A defensive tackle to play in the pros. He just needs to be a little bit more consistent. And then Rob Bain, Jamal Milan, Jamel President. It's a group that has about six guys who could start for most Big Ten teams, and that's been pretty rare for Illinois. Now, five of those are seniors, so enjoy this defensive
line. Right, again, yeah. I feel like if everyone's getting a theme from what you're saying, saying here. It's let's enjoy this year. Let me ask you, going back to fans, going back to Lovie Smith, how much do you think having Lovie Smith here brings more people down from Chicago, brings more interest in into Illini football and people coming down here for the games? And we're thinking about, you know, there's billboards all over. There's been a big marketing push, right? Our state, our team, anybody driving between here and Chicago can see those on 57.
Of course, some Bears fans.
I was going to say, not that, right.
I think finally, though, Mark Trestman probably has them thinking better of Lovie Smith after what Mark Trestman, what happened there. But, yeah, I think it gives them some visibility. I think people are intrigued there. I think the biggest part of the fan base that this affects is students. I mean, we've seen on Twitter.
You mean there'll actually be students at the games? Is that what
yeah,
you,
okay. I mean, we've seen the pictures of an empty student place. That's going to be full on Saturday. The students who most of them live in Chicago in the suburbs, right? Those people are interested. You got to get some excitement in the student fan base. And the day Lovie was hired, he went to the Union. That place was packed. They're all taking selfies with the Illinois football coach. I mean, can you imagine them doing that with Beckman or Cubitt? As much as I respected Cubitt and you know, Beckman, you know, made it to a bowl game, no chance. I mean, he brings cachet, he brings celebrity, he brings buzz back to Illinois football. So, yeah, in the short term, yes, I think people are more interested. They're more intrigued to see what he can do. But at some point, you got to win. You got to win to keep people in the stands.
We've got less than a minute left, Jeremy. Really quick, what are the big games you're going to be watching for? I don't know how important you think this weekend is. Well, is North Carolina going to be the big game you're going to be watching for in the beginning?
Yeah, I think there's most of the games that are key for Illinois are in the front half of the schedule. The back half is really, really difficult. And as I said, I just expect them to have a couple injuries, and that's going to expose their depth. So they got to make a lot of hay early. North Carolina would be a program boosting win. If they can beat a top 25 team at home in primetime, then we might get something going here in the Lovie
Smith. All right.
They're quicker than we thought.
Thanks for that, Jeremy. That's going to be my first game I'm going to be attending. So there we go. We'll be cheering for Illini. Jeremy Warner, you can catch him on the Tay and Jay show on ESPN. Thanks for being with us, Jeremy.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
Thanks for tuning into the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo on this Friday, the first Friday of fall. We're talking college football. We've been doing our Big Ten college preview. We were just talking about the Illini. We want to shift now to the Wildcats, to Northwestern. Joining us is Zach Peerless. He's the editor-in-chief of Inside NU. That's SB Nation's Northwestern site. If you are a Northwestern fan or if you have questions or comments about the Big Ten in general, you can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet to 21st Show. Hey, Zach, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So, you know, we're talking so much about Illinois this offseason. Lovie Smith has kind of dominated the Big Ten, definitely Illinois football headlines. People might forget that Northwestern is actually coming off of a 10-win season. And I feel like this is, as a Northwestern alum and a typical Northwestern football fan, I feel like this is typical, right? That people are always overlooking or having expectations of the Wildcats that they don't live up to. So do you think that people are going to overlook Northwestern this year?
I definitely think early Northwestern's going to be overlooked. Northwestern's the only Power 5 team that won 10 games last year and isn't in the top 25. So I think this is a team that's going to be overlooked. They return a significant amount of their offense from last year. I think that it's a team that is definitely being overlooked right now, but they're going to have the opportunity to prove it early in the season and then definitely in October.
Ironically, in a way, is it maybe easier? Do you think there's less pressure on Northwestern right now because so much of the focus is on Illinois?
I definitely think that not having outside pressure is something that will really help this team. You talk about 2 years ago, Northwestern was coming off that 10-3 season in 2012, tons of expectations, and they really crumbled after that College game day game against Ohio State. Definitely this year, I think the expectations from maybe the national media and even the Illinois media, the state of Illinois media, is not really focused on Northwestern, which I think can be helpful. But inside the program, they definitely have very high expectations of themselves.
Yeah, what have they been doing to prepare for this season?
One of the things I think is working on the depth of this football team. Pat Fitzgerald has talked about it over and over again. Going back again to that 2013 team, that team had a ton of skill, but after you got past that kind of first depth, that first line of depth, it was very, very weak. This year, they think they have a lot of depth and a lot of key positions. Wide receiver was a position that dramatically underachieved last year. They think they have improved depth there. Running back depth is great as well. I think the other thing is this team's just more focused. You remember that other 10-win team was dealing with the union issue.
Right, sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think that this team is a lot more focused, and they know that they're going to have to – nothing's going to be handed to Northwestern this year. They're going to have to prove that that 10-win season last year was not a fluke.
So that union issue, just going back to that for just a minute, Zach, that was the whole NLRB decision about players and they were trying to unionize. Has everybody kind of just forgotten that? Has that, the whole student athlete conversation is always such an interesting one, especially when you're talking about the Big Ten. But has that conversation just kind of gone away?
I think so, for the most part. I know about halfway through last year, Pat Fitzgerald got a question about that, and he said, yes, it's so much easier when you have a team that's united and just focused on football. Not only was that union talk a distraction, but it's also something that some of the players supported, but not all of the players. So very interesting from that aspect. I think it's something that's gone away and something that last year really, really helped the team just focus and win a lot of close games down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Zach Peerless. We're talking about Northwestern. It's our Big Ten College preview on the 21st. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455 if you want to join us. And Zach, let's talk about the team. Let's talk about experience. And what are we looking at in terms of how many players are on the team, have been around for a while? It's sort of a different story. Just to contrast it with Illinois, obviously there's been a lot of stability in this program in terms of coaching and the players. So I wonder how much you think that also affects the team this season, how much that helps kind of, as you've been talking about, helping them gel.
Yeah, so the biggest issue for Northwestern last year was a redshirt freshman quarterback in Clayton Thorson. Thorson is obviously back again this year, and the reviews of him this offseason have been very positive. Not only has he had the chance to be the definitive number one guy all offseason, but because of that, he becomes a leader, like a natural leader on this team. He gets all of the first-team reps, whereas last offseason he was splitting those first-team reps. So you look at the experience returning, that's going to pay huge dividends. Clayton Thorson is just that much more confident and simply that much better after his first year of college football. Around the roster, you have five offensive linemen returning that played a significant role. The big losses are at defensive end, where Northwestern loses both of its starters. Both of those guys went on to the NFL. But that's an area where Pat Fitzgerald, again, has been impressed with the younger guys stepping up. They have two experienced guys stepping in. And then another big loss would actually be at wide receiver. A lot of people, however, think that it's going to be sort of an addition by subtraction sort of thing. They think last year's wide receivers really struggled. The wide receiver group as a whole posted the highest drop percentage under any Pat Fitzgerald coach team. So that's going to be an area in which Northwestern is hoping that the losses maybe actually make that unit better. They have a lot of younger guys hoping to step up this year.
And just, well, we want to just stay on the office for a minute. I know last year there were a lot of criticisms for coaching being pretty conservative. What do you think? Do you think that, are we going to see an offense that's going to be willing to take more risks? What do you think we're going to see this year?
Yeah, there was a very common kind of criticism of offensive coordinator Mick McCall that he was really conservative. But you can go either way with that. Yes, he called a very conservative game plan. However, he also didn't really have the pieces to air it out. You talk about a freshman quarterback that's never played against college competition until that year. So I think this year he'll simply have the pieces. They moved some more athletic guys to wide receiver. You talk about Solomon Vault and Marcus McShepard, two really athletic guys that they think can beat guys down the field. I think that as well as pairing that with Clayton Thorson's experience, he's a talented guy. He just needs to put it all together. I think you'll see Northwestern taking some more shots down the field, hopefully trying to run a more balanced offensive scheme.
You know, as we're thinking about how tough this, I'm thinking about last year and how tough it was to predict how the season went, right? Because Northwestern beat Wisconsin and Stanford and then got blown out by Michigan and Iowa. Do you think that there's going to be more consistency, or do you think that this team is going to be easier to predict this season?
For me as a predictor, I sure hope so. I would say.
So what's your prediction then?
Yeah, I would say, so yeah, I think this team will be easier to predict. I think they have more talent, so they'll avoid those blowouts. I had them slated at 8-4 this year, but there are so many toss-up games again that, I mean, it was impossible to predict them last year. I'll say it'll be almost impossible to predict them this year.
All right, let's talk about October for Northwestern, right? Because there's three road games at Iowa, Michigan State, and Ohio State. Is that really going to be October? Do you see that being sort of the definition of the season for the Wildcats?
Yeah, that October schedule will pretty much scare anyone in the nation. You talked about it. Iowa, Ohio State, and Michigan State all on the road. That is an incredibly difficult stretch, and I think it's one where you talk about if Northwestern wants to contend for the Big Ten, they have to win at least one of those three games. If they want to have a successful season, though, which I think most people would define as an over 500 year, which would mean at least a bowl game and a bowl win, then you can lose all three of those games as long as you take care of your business elsewhere. So I think it's one of these things where if Northwestern October 1st goes into Iowa and wins, then you're looking at a team that's contending for the Big Ten championship. If they go into Iowa and lose, they go to Michigan State and lose, go to Ohio State and lose, then you can still look at this season and say it was a success. It's just probably not going to be a team that contends for the Big Ten championship.
Before we get to, because I'd love to hear your predictions about who's going to the Big Ten championship game, there is, Northwestern does have a November game against Illinois. Do you want to make a prediction for that game? How important is that game for Northwestern, given all the hype that we see around Lovie Smith and the Illini?
Lovie Smith is definitely not backing down. I remember at Big Ten Media Days, he declared Illinois Chicago's team, which is something that Northwestern.
Right, those are kind of fighting words for, or at least is it for Evanston, right? Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Definitely, like some fighting words there. Didn't sit too well with a lot of Northwestern fans. I think it's a very important game. You talk about Illinois not only as the two Big Ten teams, but it's also a really fertile recruiting ground as well. And Illinois and Northwestern compete for a lot of the same recruits, a lot of similar athletes. Never really going to compete for a bunch of five stars in football, but maybe some low four stars, high three star recruits. And it's important that Northwestern continues kind of this ascension above Illinois for that recruiting title, as well as just kind of being the pride of the state. As far as the prediction goes, I think Northwestern's a better team than it was last year. Obviously, Illinois should be a better team, especially with Lovie Smith at the helm. But the game's in Evanston. I still think Northwestern finds a way to win this game by a couple of scores.
You know, it's a really interesting point you made, Zach, about recruiting. And I wonder, from your perspective, being in Evanston, and obviously, I think everybody, if we're thinking about recruiting and we're thinking about everybody's going to be watching this season. But right now, before the season beginning, what's your view from Evanston about what people are saying about Lovie Smith, the Illini, versus Northwestern?
So the biggest thing I think is when you ask a 17-year-old, do you know Lovie Smith? A 17-year-old in the Chicago area, do you know Lovie Smith? They'll say, of course, they
Yeah,
know him
and
from
do they know
Spirit
Pat
Day.
Fitzgerald? Right.
Right, no, because Pat Fitzgerald, everybody that was born, and maybe in 1985 will remember him for that incredible Northwestern Rose Bowl 1995 year. But these guys are too young to remember that, and maybe they know Northwestern from their recent success, maybe from that bowl win over Mississippi State in 2012. But in general, they're all going to know Lovie Smith better. They're all going to remember the Bears in the Super Bowl. So I think that Lovie Smith is a major player on the recruiting trail. You're talking about 17-year-old guys that grew up with Lovie Smith as a big part of their football experience, not Pat Fitzgerald.
Zach, let's talk about the Big Ten. I mean, we've spent so much of this hour talking about Illinois and the teams, but who are you really looking at? What are we looking at in terms of the real powerhouses in the Big Ten this season?
So the biggest one is going to be always Ohio State. That team is Urban Meyer just finds a way to consistently replace talent with even more talent. They only have six returning starters this year, and they're still favored to win the Big Ten. That just speaks volumes to how good Urban Meyer is. I think that I'll take them as my favorite as well. They return their quarterback, which is not something that Michigan or Michigan State can say. And then I think that people are sleeping a little bit on Iowa. That's a team that was just fantastic last year, had a really good year, returned a ton of guys. Kirk Ferentz seems to get it done every year in Iowa City. So I would say in the East, I'm going to go with Ohio State. And then in the West, which is Northwestern and Illinois' division, I'm going to go with Iowa yet again.
I'm curious, as you think about this season, how much you think Big Ten football is sort of. I'm just thinking about basketball and other college sports and their popularity in Illinois. Do you think that Lovie Smith and Northwestern's, success or, pretty good play over the past couple of years, do you think that changes fans and how much they care about college football versus, say, college basketball in Illinois?
I would certainly say that basketball is always going to have precedence, especially at Illinois. At Northwestern, the student culture when it comes to sports is a little bit different.
That's a good
They're
way to
very
describe
much,
it, Zach.
they're very much, if the team is good and it's convenient for me to go, then I'll go. But if the team is bad or it's cold outside,
Or
or,
you have to
if it's a
study. I was
basketball
going to
team,
say.
right, exactly. Or if you have a midterm coming up, then yeah, it's two very different things. But in terms of football versus basketball, Illinois is a basketball school. Northwestern is trying to establish itself right now as a school that, one, has a good football team, but also that basketball team's been so bad for so long. I think that in general, it's a constant battle. You look at some schools and you say that they're football schools. Look at other schools, say they're basketball schools. I think Northwestern really, this year at least, has much higher expectations for football. They have a couple night games, which is going to do wonders for the student attendance. Last year, there were so many 11 a.m. games, and not a whole lot of fans want to roll out of bed at 8 o'clock and get ready for games and then
Right,
head over.
right.
So I think Northwestern this year is looking to establish itself not only as a good team, but a team that people want to watch, especially in prime time.
Zach Peerless is the editor-in-chief of Inside NU. That's an SB Nation site, giving us a preview of the Wildcats and Northwestern. Hey, Zach, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up on the 21st, we're going to be talking to Chicago-based musician Sir the Baptist. Stay tuned. You're listening to the 21st. You're listening to the 21st. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. You're gonna have to forgive me, yeah. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. Hey. As you can hear, the jazz, hip-hop, and gospel influences from musician Sir the Baptist. The Chicago native caught a lot of people's attention at this year's Lollapalooza when at one point he performed from inside a coffin and asked the crowd, "Would you care if it was me?" The set may have been unique to most people watching, but for those familiar with Sir the Baptist, messages like that are nothing out of the ordinary. He's on the line with us now to talk about his art, his spiritual upbringing, and how he's using that to create music people are rallying around. Hey, sir, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
You know, after your Lala set, you explained that as an artist contributing to culture, you feel like you need to go to these extremes to get people talking. When did you start to form that kind of mindset when it comes to your music?
Well, you know, I always knew if I did music again, as I did it, I always grew up in music. But I knew that if I did it again and did it and gave it my all, that I would have to add a piece to it that I learned while working at Leo Burnett and understanding marketing from a different point of view. I wanted to put marketing with music and pair it in a way that could really connect to the human person, you know?
Yeah, and you mentioned Leo Burnett. Obviously, one of the biggest advertising agencies out there. You were writing jingles, and you worked on pretty big campaigns like McDonald's, right?
Right, exactly.
And at what point did you decide to make the transition into music full-time?
I think after I did a few things. One thing specifically, I helped McDonald's put a digital jukebox in every McDonald's via the Wi-Fi. I did this with a few other organizations. And when I put artists on the Wi-Fi and on the jukebox, it got 3, 4, 6 million downloads. And I just, you know what? I need to do this myself. So I got up and I said, hey, listen, I want to take the chance. And Ira and Tyler, who was one of my colleagues at that point, you know, really pushed me and said, hey, you know, go ahead and do it.
Let's play a little bit of your music to give people a chance to hear what it is. I'm going to play, this is Raise Hell. By the way, the album's called Preacher's Kid, PK Preacher's Kid. Let's take a listen to it.
Girl, mama say she gonna lose me. She pray the angels out on duty. Preacher can't even rebuke me. No, mama. Born a sinner and I'm about to sin again tonight. You gon' have to forgive me, yeah. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. You gon' have to forgive me, yeah. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. Hey, yeah, yeah. Hey, yeah, yeah. I'd have been to the water. I'd have been baptized. Now I need new water. Sipping on that new wine. I know what's best for me, soda. I won't heaven when I die, but there's this one thing that I can't seem to change. It's my bad habit. You 9 to 5 and I've been there trapping. Worried, even nerd strapped. We call that Inspector Gadget. When those ends meet, that's magic in your blood. That's that magic you've been living just to keep up. But tonight we about to turn the fuck up. Mama say she gonna lose me. Yeah, she prayed the angels out on duty. Preacher can't even rebuke me. Yeah, yeah, born a sinner and I'm about to sin again tonight. You gon' have to forgive me. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. You gon' have to forgive me. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. Hey, hey, yeah. Hey, yeah, yeah. Good girls, bad girls. Rims in those vagabonds. Homie call a few thotties, skip body. Green everywhere like Don Juan. Big pooping like Don Juan. Diamonds in my cup like Don Juan. Church turned up like Don Juan. We all addicted. What you want? That bad habit. You 9 to 5 and I've been that trapping. Even kids got power rings. VR troopers when they strap it. Turn 32, then that's that magic. That's that dumb magic. Thank the good Lord for the good luck. Cause tonight we're about to turn up. Mama says she gonna lose me. Yeah, she pray the angels out on duty. Yeah, preacher can't even rebuke me. Yeah, I'm a sinner, but I'm about to sin a fool.
you're gonna have to forgive me. I'ma raise hell until I reach heaven's door. You're gonna have to forgive me. I'ma raise hell until I reach it. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. What? Squad.
That's Raise Hell. It's from the debut album PK Preacher's Kid from Chicago-based musician, Chicago native Sir the Baptist. So it gives people kind of a sense of all the influences that in your that are in your music. And we should talk about your name, Sir the Baptist. That comes from your dad. Can you explain a little bit of your upbringing and how much church has played a role in your music? You can hear it there, obviously.
Yeah. I grew up in Brownsville, and my dad was a Baptist preacher. And growing up there, you really learn a lot about musicianship, because most of the great musicians of our time has come from gospel music and church. So, yeah, I got my first opportunity to perform and everything like that in a choir. And I just knew if I went to do music in a more, you know, professional way, that I would still want to incorporate that piece. You know, so many guys come from the church and they try to, you know, instantly become cool, you know, or do something that would be the popular norm. I wanted to stick to my guns, and knowing that that I'm a preacher's kid, I'm a church boy.
Yeah. Well, and you even have the hashtag Follow the Robe. How important is it to have sort of not just your upbringing, but your dad's legacy? How much do you think that gets incorporated into your performance now as a musician?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Because I still look up to him as if he was, you know, a superhero. You know, he died when I was 11, but he still influenced my music and the way I perform it day to day. You know, that robe is a throwback to what my dad would wear and remind me of, you know, the moments we had in church.
Do you remember his preaching?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And family has a lot of tapes and everything, you know?
Yeah. I wonder how much you think that has also now part of your music. Obviously, there's a activism and there's a message behind your music. I mean, do you sort of think of your music as your way of getting your word out?
Exactly. Exactly.
Would you say, though, I wonder, would you say that your music, would you, I don't know if you would call it religious, would you call it spiritual? Do you think there's a difference?
I think it's life music, because, you know, because when we go to separate our life or our day-to-day or our love or our romance or emotional, when we separate that from spirituality, we sort of compartmentalize our lives, you know. So I think the best thing to say is that it's just life music. It has a little bit of spirituality. It has a little bit of your grandma in there. It has a little bit of my grandma. You know, you have all of these pieces in there. And just a day-to-day, a day in the life of a preacher's kid.
Well, and I'm thinking of particular of your song Wake Up, right? Because there's a lot in there. There's a lot about speaking to what's going on right now, not just in Chicago, but across the country. You know, some people have said, you know, have talked about how much your music is reflective of and part of the Black Lives Matter movement. For you, when you're thinking about, I'm thinking about the lyrics in Wake Up. What was part of your process of writing that?
Well, I always try to give a balanced opinion to anything, you know. Well, the reason why I wrote Wake Up like that is because while we can complain about all the other things that go on in my community, I wanted my people to wake up and understand that we're also killing each other, you know. And while there's not a conversation for others to have on our behalf, it's a conversation that families should have. You know, those family talks that you don't necessarily invite the neighborhood into, but you have that conversation and you talk about the tough things. And for that second, it was, you know, Wake Up is a tough conversation between me and my community abroad, you know, that's dealing with this problem.
And that said, how is it now going out and performing big songs, not just Wake Up, but I'm thinking Raise Hell on big stages and national TV, whether it's Late Night or Lala? What kind of reception are you getting?
That's crazy. I'm getting people don't know how to feel, you know?
Right. Well, like, they don't know how to. Is it one of those things where people also want to categorize you and they feel like they can't figure out where you belong?
Right, right. They can't put me there because while many would love to put me in gospel or many would love to put me in hip hop, it's kind of hard to put me in either one because I carry this duality all the time. And this is what I grew up under. You know, I was raised in the 90s around, you know, the projects in Chicago, but my dad's church was in between, you know, five projects. So it gives me a perspective of part hip hop and part gospel, and I'm always going to teeter that line. I'm not going to say the things that gospel would want me to say, but I'm going to say a little some things that's deeper than just your girlfriend and your chain that you would probably hear in hip hop.
Right. Yeah. And I think you probably have too many bad words to be in gospel music, right?
Right.
So
exactly.
do you ever have conflicting feelings about whether to focus on the music or focus on your message? Or for you, are those just so deeply entwined that you don't really differentiate between them?
Wow, that's a beautiful question. You know, I spent so much time making sure that blend, neither one goes unfed. It's like two kids and you don't want to call neither one your favorite, you know. I'm in love with mission. I wrote my eulogy when I was like 14, and it was because I wanted to plan what mattered to me the most. And on the phone, standing here in Bronzeville, I'll tell you, I'm mostly moved by mission. And the reason why I do music is because mission moves me. I have no need to do music if the world was just perfect. I would just sing about, you know, things being perfect. But mission, really, I write every line hoping to reach someone. My music is basically an open letter, you know, and it's mostly mission. So I would say mission guides my pen when I'm writing music.
That said, as you said, you're in Bronzeville. It's September 2nd, so we're coming off of August numbers of violence in Chicago. You know, this is really looking like this is going to be a really bad year for the numbers and the amount of violence of people being killed by shootings in Chicago. I mean, is that affecting what you're writing now? Is that affecting what you're thinking about as you're thinking about that message?
Honestly, yeah. Right now, I'm really dealing with that. You know, I was just in New York for Afropunk and a bunch of meetings and stuff like that. And I can't lie, I was a little nervous to come home because Bronzeville is Southside. You know, but I knew that I need to come home because I need to write more and I need to find what the problem is and talk to my people. I'm spending a lot of time studying right now, a lot of books, reading. I'm trying to dig more deeply into the shootings of what's going on to see what's really behind this. It almost feels unreal. You know, a lot of people don't know why they're getting shot or who's shooting them, or some people haven't aggregated or caused any problems with anyone and they're getting shot. So it's almost unreal. It's scary.
Yeah, yeah, I bet it is. Let me ask you really quickly, you have an organization called DeedPen. What's the idea behind that?
So DeedPen is an organization I started maybe 3 years ago and couldn't really get to it like I wanted to because I was doing music, but I knew I wanted it to work. I'm working with Allison Welkin. She's a nurse from Northwestern Hospital, and she also caters to all the fans in each festival, handing out care packages that has bars, fruit bars, and water and vitamin C and
so,
stuff like that.
So, yeah, so nerd. Sorry, we're just about out of time, but is the idea that people can kind of post good things that they're doing and share that in the world?
Exactly.
All right,
exactly.
Cool. Thanks for that. Sir the Baptist, let's go out. I want to thank everybody. We're going to wrap up the show today. Say thanks to everybody for a great week. Thank you to Sir the Baptist. His debut album is PK, Preacher's Son. This is What We Got.
If I could be anything, I wanna be the little engine in the hood, yeah. If I could show you anything,
yes, sir.
I'll show you that our hood was once all good. See this right.